The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Frank Cotolo. He just talks and 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 talks.
Now, I want to talk to you because you're obviously upset.
Permission is granted.
Glad I met you. I'm glad I met you, James.
I was not considering the fact that I, in fact, am the third man, capital T, capital D, capital M. But I am.
I want to show you something.
Let's take off all our clothes.
And maybe that's true. And that's what I said.
That's the how we used to sing it. I'm sorry. This is the way we used to sing it. It's the way you should sing it from now on.
But look at this. What is this?
I hate to put a negative spin on this, because it's great to drink, and everyone loves to drink.
They say you should not drink alcohol when it's so hot.
And I've talked about this, too, in the past, when I talked about soccer moms.
That was so good.
No, I didn't talk about soccer moms.
Excuse me for saying it. It's not even my place to say it.
I'll talk about soccer moms who became roller derby moms. And don't...
It was the old stuff.
And don't you think I haven't stopped. I have given up on the roller derby thing. Let's just get Pi Kim on the phone.
Wait. Where are the phones?
They took the phones.
Huh? We're not using Skype. Tonight, today, this afternoon.
You're such a hero. You're so rich. How come you're coming down here and waste your time with such a bunch of bums?
But let's not get into that. Let's not talk about me. Even though it is all about me. Let's not talk about me. Let's talk about Nancy.
What did I learn as a kid on Western? You don't sell a guy one car.
But I believe that, you know, we could have a lot more fun. I'm not trying to be politically correct here either.
So I don't know, do I? Let me have your attention for a moment.
Do what you got to do if you're a neo-postmodernist, and I know you are.
What is that?
Look, just go. I'll tell you, the best thing to do is to just Google the gal.
Let's talk about something important.
I really am when it comes to this thing.
Let's talk about something important.
Just a whole nother angle just took place in my head.
Put that coffee down.
But let's forget about drugs and medicine. Let's talk about sex.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
That's going to be happening. I got some things to cover before we get there. Dirty Things Get Stiff by Frank Cotolo.
It may mean something to you. It may not. I don't know. I don't know anymore.
Does that mean that if you dirty things stand, dirty things get stiff?
Okay, here we go.
Dear God, you know you made many, many poor people. I know it's no great shame to be poor. But it's no great honor either. What would have been so terrible if I had a small fortune? If I were a rich man? All day long I'd pity, pity, bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. If I were a pretty, pretty rich, yiddle, diddle, 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 I'd build a big tall house with rooms by the dozen right in the middle of the town. A fine tin roof with a real wooden floors below. There could be one long staircase just going up, and one even longer coming down, and one more leading nowhere just for show. I'd fill my yard with chicks and turkeys and geese and ducks for the town to see and hear, squawking just as noisily as they can. And each loud pukkie, will land like a trumpet on the inn, as if to say, here lives a wealthy man. If
if I were a rich man. All day long I'd bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. If I were a pretty, pretty rich, yes, a diddle, diddle, diddle.
Two ways about it. There are two ways about it. Get that?
That's a good toll over there. You know what I mean?
There are two ways about it. There's nothing wrong with your computer. We control the bitrate. We control the sound card. We can make it louder or softer. We can shrink your browser or browse your shrinker. Ratai and a couple surfers and netaholics and infomaniacs remain curious yellow throughout the next 2 hours. We got some characters for you. Of broadcasting is now on your iPhone, your iPod, or your tower of your computer, or the computer tower, wherever it is you're listening. I'm with you, barding along the way. Stay with us. Heather Drain is coming up as I continue to chronicle Y2K Plus 13. From ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to city, from Othello and into every bordello. And that's a skip and a jump from each town, each hamlet, each city, each and the roaring plains that follow through after the cities out into the desert, over the mountains and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. My name is Frank Atolo. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of the show and the name of the title of the show. I chronicle Cthulhu Chronicles. It's an action title. This isn't a title like A Tale of Two Cities. That tells you something. This is Cthulhu Chronicles. It's action. I am in action. I am moving. Cthulhu does chronicle. What does he do? He chronicles. And that is why we continue Moving along right here, Y2K plus 13 on this fabulous August. Now, this is our first show in August. We got a bunch of them in August, and they will all be August. The August shows of August. They will be known from here on as the August shows of August. Cthulhu Chronicles, of course. So Heather Drain is going to be with us, and we're going to be talking about some wonderful people who I know you all know and love and have seen and will see again, no doubt, in repeats and in new projects across this great wide world of ours, the wide world of entertainment that we move along. If you listened from the beginning, on the beginning being when it started out with the parental guidance, if you know from the beginning, you heard the wonderful, now I wouldn't consider him a character actor, although he did play characters, and definitely one of my favorites of all time was Zero Mostel. First of all, anybody with whose first name is Zero, boy, you gotta love a guy whose parents named him Zero, and that's gotta be a wonderful thing. Although I don't know if that's his real name. I don't know much about him except he was fabulous in whatever he did, and he made material like Fiddler on the Roof, which for all two purposes can be considered kind of mainstream musical, you know, it's classical Broadway theater, and not everybody in the arts is very, you know, it's not, it's really mainstream, what I'm saying, and it'd be a different kind of art, be the art of mainstream, not art per se, and but anything that Zero put his energy into, fantastic. If you've never seen, a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum, and I don't know if you could ever see it on stage, but that's the difference. Zero on stage. We're not celebrating Zero today, but Zero was a character actor, and he did play characters, although he has had starring roles. But that Broadway thing is just amazing, and there are character actors on Broadway, too. A lot of people do that. And so Heather Drain, who, of course, knows more about actors, actresses, movies of all sorts of great, not just grade A, grade B, and grade C, but those fabulous grade D, grade E, and grade F. You didn't know that the movies were graded down that far. Well, they are down that far. So I thought it would be wonderful to open up with Zero Mostel, who doing From Fiddler on the Roof, If I Was a Rich Man. You know, you might not even like that, but when you hear him do it, you've just got to watch. He commands the stage. That's it. He commands the stage. And if you ever want to learn how to work on a stage, which is totally different than movies, because on the stage you've got to be broad. You don't necessarily play the grandstand, but you've got to be broad and you've got to be bigger, larger than life. So, and that was Zero Mostel. Funny, wonderful, delicious. If you ever get a chance to see the original producers on the movie by Mel Brooks, the original producers, you'll see fabulous, fabulous guy. And people like that will be celebrated on this show here, Y2K plus 13, as we move into August and chronicle everything that we're going to do here. What, you know, I forgot to do this, although I was doing that before. I'm so busy. I've been so busy that it's difficult to continue to do any of this, as we say. But I'm going to do this right now, and then we're going to go get, as early as we can, we're going to get, you know who, Heather Drain. What is this? This is another one. I'm looking for something else. Well, let's do this and then we'll come back.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky escapades. Parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
Still on Amazon. Still. Still there. Go get it.
When you talk classic literature, what names come to your mind? These days, only one, Frank Cotolo. That's me. And my new book, Molotov Memoirs, is rapidly becoming the classic of all classics. How can you get your hands on this? Read it, absorb it, and make it part of your life? go to blurb.com and just type in my name, Frank Cotolo, and the fabulous book that's illustrated by T. Stephen Gesick and written by me, Frank Cotolo, can be yours. Become a part of the classic literature generation. Get Molotov Memoirs at blurb.com today.
It's not new, but it's new to you, right? I'll have that become a part of the class. I don't even remember doing that. The classic literature generation, the CLG, as the case may be. Become a member of that. You can also, if you don't want to spit out $20 or $30, whatever the hardcover costs. But boy, that's a beautiful piece of book. That's a beautiful thing to have to hold in your hands. It's a beautiful, wonderful thing to give someone else. You know, it's so beautiful, you don't even have to wrap it if you give it as a gift. But you can also get it digitally, which is still beautiful because the same words that appear in the print analog version appear in the digital version, and the same pictures. I don't even call them pictures. Let's just say the artwork by T. Stephen Gesick also appear there and will be there if you can get that too. And it's a lot cheaper if you don't want to spit for the 10, 20, 30. I don't even know what these things cost anymore, but I'm appealing to you. And I'm telling you, it's good that, and there might be, MM2 or more Molotov memoirs or Molotov memoirs. You can call them Molotov memoirs. No, Molotov. There might be more. There's stuff going on. And I want to remind you also that for free, you don't have to pay for any of this. This might whet your appetite, W-H-E-T, whet your appetite, so that you want to go over to get, Molotov memoirs when you get into this nonsense, this entertaining. I just entertaining nonsense. I love saying nonsense. Nonsense is good for me. I don't consider nonsense tossable, you know, or dismissible. Nonsense is good. Nonsense good. When you want to read that stuff, you can get over to cotolo.tumblr.com. A lot of people go into Tumblr now. People have Tumblr pages. You don't tumble with an E. They're changing the entire paradigm of words and everything, what's going on with the internet. But there's nothing we can do about it except go along with it. T-U-M-B-L-R. There's no E. Cotolo, there's three O's. Cotolo.tumblr.com. And there's some funny stuff going on there. At least I'm told it's funny. I do it, and it's funny. If I laugh, I figure you'll laugh. What else is going on? Plenty of other things. And we're going to have an announcement sooner or later about what's going on on Tuesday nights. They're going to have something special going to be happening on Tuesday nights for all of you people to carry around on your phones. Again, you're listening on your iPhones, your iPads, or you're making a copy of it, listen to it on your iPods, whatever you want to do, you can do it. Be my friend, Frank, be my friends, all my friends, Frank Cotolo at Facebook, F-A-C-E, you know how to spell that, you know that junk going on over there. People come and people go on Facebook like mad, and what a difference that place is. What a difference is that site from when I first got there, as opposed to second got there? When I got there, when I arrived, let's just say when I arrived, I've been there for almost ever. What else is going on is all the stuff, there might be other stuff going on, but I get the books. We got the books, we got that during the rest of August. Yes, Tom Savino will be back for another Cotolo Chronicles. I'm hoping to get Dr. Woldar here, of course, and Dr. Gary Popoli is on holiday, as they say in England. I'm on holiday, not on a holiday. I'm on holiday. They use holiday as a, I guess that would be a, I'm on holiday, I'm on vacation. They use it as a noun. Well, it would be a noun anyway. It's holiday. But they don't say I'm on a holiday or a specific, I'm on holiday. So we'll get him back again. I've been in touch with Veronica Monet may come back, and we may talk about all things sexy with talking about some polls and studies and things and people treating people like they should. Why is sex not strange? No, what is it? Sex, don't be, no shame, no shame, no sex, no shack, not whatever it is, you know that. Let's get Pai Kim on the phone. I mean, get Pai Kim again. Whatever happened to Pai Kim? Memoirs of an American Geisha. Did you go out and get that book? That's probably available too. And I'm just advertising books and books and books. There's another great book coming out by Lynn Lifshin. I don't mind telling you about books. Read a book. Even Anthony Anthony Jeselnik even says it. The last thing he says, I can't repeat the thing that I say because I only say it at the end of my show, the very last thing I say. The last thing he says on, I could repeat his stuff. The last thing he says on his show is, go read a book. And I think that's a really important thing, especially for a comedian that dark and bleak and fresh and influential as Anthony Jeselnik. Anthony Jeselnik, Antony. Go read a book. And there's plenty of books to read out there. That doesn't necessarily mean go get a textbook and learn how to, you know, if the red wire connects to the yellow wire, connects to the blue wire. It doesn't mean be an electrician. Doesn't mean go out and, it doesn't mean, read a book. Read. Do you know, I bet you that there are people out there, blind people out there, who read more in Braille than some people read. And people who can see, who have sight, perfectly good sight. And I don't know, I was completely shocked last week when I went to the eye doctor. And the eye doctor said, you don't need glasses. When here I am walking around thinking I need glasses. I learned about this spot between the source of where you're looking and your eyes. And there's a in between now, there's a spot that is cloudy for everybody. Actually told me to go out and buy those $5 glasses because they have reading. I learn all the time. I'm learning things, and it's because I read books. Read books. Read articles. Read. Go read a book doesn't just mean go read a book. Thank you, Anthony, for reminding everybody and telling kids to go read a book. It's important. Don't just go read what your friend's eating on Facebook. He's not eating it on Facebook. He's telling you that he's eating it. What else is going on? It's August, and it's supposed to be cool. The jet stream coming in from the west and going just sweeping through. So maybe we'll be done with that horrible weather that put a crimp in our performance as time moved on through. That was a very, very hot and disgusting early time that happened. My name is Frank Catone, and the man's name is doing the title of the show. We're going to get Heather Drain here. I think Heather's almost, I think she's ready. We're going to call her, and we're going to be talking about character actors, and you're going to be thinking, now remember, take out a couple of things. I have to remind you, I haven't reminded you in a while. It is time during this show to replenish your precious bodily fluids, even though it's gotten cooler. I mean, I don't know how some of us would have made it through the heat if we didn't continually replenish our precious bodily fluids. You can do it. You should do it as you're sitting and listening. Open a window. If it's not, it might not be nighttime. But, you know, I know some people are listening at work and listening on their phones and, you know, and doing what they do. They're multitasking, it's called. But you have to drink and replenish your precious bodily fluids. This must happen. That's number one. What was number two? I forgot number two. That one was replenish your precious bodily fluids. And two was to, your notebook. You got to get your Cotolo Chronicles notebook. And I want to remind everybody that it is now that time of the year. At least it is in the Eastern Hemisphere. Well, we're in the Western Hemisphere. We're in the Western Hemisphere. In the Western Hemisphere, it's at least, it's that time when people are starting to look for pens and pencils and things, equipment. It's not equipment, tools. It's not tools. It's supplies to go back to school. So you can get out there and get those great Mead notebooks that you can use for anything. I don't get paid by Mead to say this. I just love these things, and I use them all the time. And I don't care if you get knockoffs that are cheaper. Just, you know, but the Meads are the best. And if you like to write really small, you use college lines. No, it's called college, I don't know, space. Or use the other one. Wide, whatever you get. Mead, though, makes those compositions. They're your origin. Originally made those very famous composition books that everybody uses. And you see my brain. Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. No matter how digital this world gets, there's always going to be a certain amount of analog. And when it comes to composition books, the brand, the whole style created by Mead in those composition books, they're always going to be here. Whether you read a grocery list, a laundry list, whether you write a list, whether you're a hitman and you write a list of people you have to kill, whatever that might be, those are the books. Those are the books you need to write, put things in there and write them and, hey now, be whatever you got to do it. So go. But I'm saying that now all the stores are selling school supplies. There you go. Wow, how could I forget a phrase like school supplies? So you go get them. Go get them, some of those books. Stock up on them now because there may be a lot of bargains out there. Keep them for the entire year. And write things in them. When you read books, make notes. When you listen to this show, of course. Tons of things that you will want to know later on, and open up widen, broaden your horizons. Let's use that one. There's a phrase almost everyone knows. Broaden your horizons and get yourself, write down these things, look them up later on your Google, on your Waffle, on your Yahoo. Waffle. That would be a great name for a search engine. Anybody want to start that business? Waffle. Waffle search. It's better than Ask. Remember when Ask was that butler? Ask the butler? Waffle. The Waffle search engine. Hey, I think we got something here. I know what's going to happen now because I said it, and I said it publicly, and because it's gone over the whole world. And then next week, there's going to be a Waffle search engine, and somebody's going to start to have an IPO, and everybody's going to get rich. And I'm going to be sitting here singing If I Were a Rich Man, because I don't have it. But you know what? I am a rich man, because I know people like Heather Drain. And because I know people like Heather Drain, I can call Heather Drain, as I'm doing right now, and get her on this show, because this show and Heather Drain go together like, oh, she answered the phone. She's waiting. She's so polite. So polite.
Hello.
Hello. You're so polite. You're so with it. You are so with it. You know exactly. You got good timing, kiddo.
Well, thank you. That's it doesn't always happen, I'll be honest with you. So when it does, I cherish it.
Well, we all step on lines and stuff, but that was good. She knows exactly what's going on. Heather Drain, once again, audience. Heather, audience. Ms. Drain, audience. Ms. Drain, how have you been?
Oh, I've been great. It's been a pretty happening week. There's this great thing, and I certainly encourage everybody to Google it, called the William Castle Blogathon.
Ah.
And the fine folks at both Gore Girls Dungeon, which is a fabulous film blog, and another equally fabulous film blog, The Last Drive-In, have been hosting. And me, along with a whole other cadre of writers, have all been writing about the different works of William Castle, the great Ballyhoo, Hullabaloo, showman, director, producer extraordinaire.
Yeah, he's kind of like how did his name just escape me? I'm thinking of the circus guy.
You're thinking maybe Barnum?
He's like Barnum? The Barnum of movie of 1950s movies, because the gimmicks that he had were great.
Oh, absolutely. But and the thing about Castle is that the gimmicks are great, but there's a lot of solid filmmaking on top of that. I mean, he was kind of able to sort of merge the worlds of great sort of, circus, carnival-type exploitation, but have some really good filmmaking.
I was a kid and went to the movies. I saw 13 Ghosts first run with the glasses.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That must have been amazing.
So I can tell you that it really was wild when his movies came out. I remember seeing The Tingler, but I didn't go to the theater where the original seats.
They tingled.
They tingled. Did you ever see a movie, an old acquaintance of mine, obviously know, and I'm going to forget his name like right now. I know. Joe Dante.
Oh, my God. No, Joe Dante's great. I mean, he directed Matinee.
Yes. That's what I was going to mention, because I haven't seen Joe in years. And we used to hang out in Hollywood when right after, I guess, he had just done Piranha. He was on his way into what have you. And he used to do some funny voiceover stuff with us. But Joe, Matinee, I only saw Matinee like last year. And that kind of has that that whole circus Barnum William Castle thing to it.
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of like a, like a Valentine, I think. Kind of a nice sort of sweet piece about, you know, about a castle type, like a William Castle type, and just, you know, he was definitely spectacular. And yeah, no, Joe Dante's great. Actually, one of my favorite films of his is Hollywood Boulevard, which I think might have been like the first or second thing that he did for Roger Corman. Mm. But it's a great, great film. Kind of, you know, Mary Warrenoff's in it. It's fabulous.
Joe, now let me, since we're going to talk about character actors, let me tell you something about Joe Dante. Let me tell you something. Like Heather Drain doesn't know what I'm going to tell him. Will you tell me if you know this? There's an actor who's in all of his movies. Dick Miller.
Oh, my God. I love Dick Miller.
Now, let me tell you why Dick Miller's in all of his movies. Because Dick Miller and him got some kind of relationship, had some kind of relationship. And Joe, as I remember, trying to make my memory serve me well, was so into one scene. It was the scene in the movie. Do you remember the movie that Dick Miller was in? I think it was a Corman movie, where he was a sculptor, but and he wanted to make statues and sculptures, and he couldn't do it, so he killed people and put clay on them.
Oh yeah, that's Bucket of Blood.
Okay,
yeah,
Bucket
great,
of Blood.
Great film.
They go, well, Joe Dante was so taken by Bucket of Blood, the one scene, and it's the most, it is, if you've never, that you've seen it, but anyone else out there, if they get a chance to see it, there's one scene where Dick Miller is sculpting a face and out of clay and whatever it is they use, right? And he's working the face and working the face. He gets so pissed. At one point he goes and he's working the face and he's trying to get the nose together and he goes, "Be a nose! Be a nose!" trying to call to the gods, "Be a nose, will you?" And Joe was so taken by that, from what I remember, he said that he promised that he would always put Dick Miller in every one of his films if he ever made films. And by golly, he's in every one. He's in everything from Small Soldiers to he's all over the place. He's always somewhere in those movies.
Which is great. I mean, every filmmaker should use Dick Miller. I mean, if Dick Miller was in everything, I mean, even in the worst film, you know, you could say, hey, at least Dick Miller was in it.
Yeah, he was. He was. Did he do anything else?
Oh, Dick, he's done a ton of, it's funny, it's very timely, you know, to mention Dick Miller since it's our character actor.
Yeah.
Go-go episode here. But, yeah, he's done, I mean, I think he's one of those where if you look him up on IMDb, I mean, you're going to see like 800 things. I mean, not literally, but you know, he's always been a working actor. He'll pop up. I mean, I'll see stuff that I'm not expecting. You know, I wouldn't expect to see Dick Miller, and it'll be like, oh, and you know, it'll be like a little thing for 5 minutes. But
yeah,
you know,
he's
cool.
Around. Yeah, he is around. I'm gonna have to look him up. Also, Joe used Kevin. Give me his name, the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah, he used Kevin McCarthy, too, a lot here and there.
Oh, yeah. Love Kevin McCarthy.
That was a big, they're coming, you're next! Now, Kevin became, a lot of these people who were, well, Kevin was actually a leading man in the smaller movies. Dick was a character actor in what, D movies?
He later on graduated as a B.
Yes, you know, he did.
but yeah, no, it's funny because like kind of I was making a few little notes for myself for this episode just because, and you know how it is, especially with anything that's live, is your brain, of course, half the time it's going to be like, nope, sorry, not going to work.
Oh,
like when you try to remember stuff. But I was doing notes and it's funny because there are some actors that I kind of think of as character actors that actually did initially their career started off as like leading men, like Sterling Hayden. I'm a huge fan of. I love Sterling Hayden, and he was one who was originally very much promoted as like the hunky, you know, I think much against his wishes, kind of like the beefcake. And then he did a lot of like great noir, like Asphalt Jungle, you know, The Killing. But then by like the 70s, I mean, he kind of, you know, the older he got, I think the more he kind of moved into the character actor mold.
Well, I heard that he retired, but he came back specifically for Godfather.
Oh, which is, I mean, who wouldn't?
Yeah.
You know, it's such a masterpiece. It's
well, no, no, but at that time, though, no one, they weren't so sure it was going to be a masterpiece at the time.
Right.
You know.
And in fact, actually, there's an actor in The Godfather that I've created for me, this is my personal opinion, of course, the holy trinity of character actors.
Okay.
One of those gentlemen is in The Godfather.
Okay, let's just try. Well, I don't have to guess. You'll just tell me. I've seen it so many times. I'll probably figure it out. But you have the holy. There's three super character actors.
Absolutely.
Why don't you do this first? Why don't you tell everybody? Because everybody in a movie plays a character. As I was talking about Zero Mostel. But why don't you give everybody the ultimate definition of character actor?
Well, and, you know, that's something I put some thought into. Because technically, I guess you could say anybody's a character actor because you're playing a character. However, for me, at least my personal definition of a character actor is an actor who is solid, continually solid, who stands out, not because they're the hero or, you know, the leading actor or actress, not for any of the, you know, big movie star reasons, but because they're sort of like, they're the workhorses that get overlooked. But if you really broke down a lot of these movies, they're the real stars. They're the ones that really put in the memorable moments, the moments where you're just like, oh, God, I love that scene.
And they do play characters, per se, that, you're right, that stand out. But they're not even, most of them aren't even considered as supporting actors. Because even supporting actors and those who get Oscars, they have larger parts usually than character actors. So don't we have to add to the definition the fact that character actors, they're in and out of a movie and they do support and they hold up a lot of story and conflict and stuff, but they aren't necessarily there as much.
I think that's true to some degree. I also think it's like they're usually kind of, it's almost sort of like a corporation. And of course, like the CEOs and the people, you know, the tiny handful of people that make the most money are the ones that are kind of given the most attention publicly. But that entity would be nothing without the worker bees. And character actors are kind of like the worker bees.
Okay. There you go. I'll buy that.
Will you buy that for a dollar?
I'll buy that. Because, you know, when I think of character actors, I usually think, growing up and watching movies that had obvious stars. But I guess what I'm talking about is like 40s and 50s movies. Because when television started, those are the movies that came on television, you know, 40s and 50s were the first ones. Now, as I think of names that come to me, are names like Eugene Paulette. Mm-hmm. Did that ring a bell?
That sounds familiar. I'll be honest. I'm not getting a film that's immediately coming to mind. I'm sure as soon as you tell me, I'm going to feel like an idiot.
Well, in Errol Flynn's Adventures of Robin Hood, he was Friar Tuck.
Oh, dang it! Yeah.
In Tyrone, and he was also the friar in The Mark of Zorro with Tyrone Power.
Oh, nice.
He talked like that.
It's terrible. I've had this really upsetting, annoying talent of being able to imitate people that people don't remember. So and that's one of them. My father, I used to sit and watch these things. My father used to love that. He was this guy, Eugene Paulette, was this rotund fellow. And, you know,
and he used to talk like that. He said that, blah, blah, blah. Oh, take that. Oh, bless you.
And I know all this talent goes nowhere. Okay, but I think of things like him. I think of a lot of people, certainly people in my generation. No, well, I guess the generation after me and after me will remember, they remember Gilligan's Island. You think of Alan Hale, but it's Alan Hale Jr. I remember Alan Hale.
Right.
Also, a character actor, never had a leading role. I mean, I'm looking at guys who were back in the old days, and they never, ever got a chance for a leading role. You said Sterling Hayden started out this way, that, and then eventually had leading roles. But I think of character actors as those type of guys. The guys, and who was, James Cagney always had a guy in his, he always had this guy, he was a good friend of his, I think he was in business one of the two, he was always in his movies, and he never, ever, now I've forgotten his name. See, my brain went off on there. But we're going to go into some of the ones people might know based on more contemporary things, because I think that would really get our younger contingent of the audience to understand character actors. So today, now if we're talking about the old days, I can come up with names and you can come up with names like that. just out of nowhere. But as of what, how can we get people to know these character actors from, when should we start, the 60s? Where do you want to start?
We definitely start the 60s. I would be actually remiss without mentioning.
Go ahead.
And I love that you used his photo on, you know, when you were promoting this very episode everybody's listening to, is John Carradine. I mean, John Carradine's an amazing, and you want to talk about a workhorse of an actor. That man did he was in everything from like The Grapes of Wrath to like Billy the Kid Meets Dracula.
Yes.
I mean, that is one hell of a resume.
And there's no mistaking some of you people who don't know, he is the father of Keith and David Carradine.
Absolutely, yeah, and Robert.
And Robert Carradine, who we often forget. I met John Carradine.
Oh my God.
And I was lucky enough to have like maybe 10 or 15 minutes with him, and it was very difficult because he was so old when I met him. And he was on a set, and he was still smoking. I mean, his fingers. He had all sorts of rheumatism. You know, he had those fingers that just later on in life they just, what do? They crinkle.
They kind of curl. No, I would always read stories about, you know, young, you know, kind of filmmakers. I think guys like Fred Olen Ray that worked with Carradine towards the very end of his life. I think they'd have to do things to, like, hide his hands.
Oh, they were really, but he managed to hold the cigarette even.
There's a way.
And I know what you mean. I think that's one of the reasons I put him up when I was looking through pictures, and I said, oh, I'll put up a picture of like the quintessential, and there was John Carradine, and I tried to ask him so much, and I tried to have a conversation with him. He was very polite. I'm not saying he was just, you know, he wasn't there half the time. I mean, well, of course, a lot of people who talk to me now aren't there. I put him in that state anyway, so I didn't learn too much. I did learn a little bit about his relationship with John Barrymore, because they were the closest of friends.
Oh, man. Can you imagine hanging out with those two guys?
I know. Sitting there and drinking and smoking with John Kett, with those two Johns, would be like some crazy class. And John Barrymore, of course, was maybe the quintessential leading man at the time. So him and John had done theater and stuff together. But anyway, yes, I put up John Kett. So we will not be remiss in saying we will mention John Carradine, and then we'll move up. But anyway, David became a leading man. Keith, I guess, became, I don't know what he became.
Well, Keith had a
bad songwriter, that's about it.
Right. Well, he did some leading man stuff. I think he kind of went more like the indie sort of route than David. So, of course, David did some indie stuff too. They both did.
Most people here would know David from Kill Bill, right?
Well, of course, Kung Fu. And,
oh, of course. God. It's all good. I knew the guy who wrote the book and then eventually sold that books for the series. Ed something. Oh boy, I didn't even expect to try to remember some of these.
That's why this is good, because you know a lot of times people get used to stuff that's very scripted and very like da 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 da, and with us it's just free flowing, babies.
Oh, this is that's what we do here. I have people on and they have their books, and I've read. They said, "Have you read it from cover to cover?" And I said, "Well, I read the sleeves on both covers." Now you get around it. Okay, you want to start in the 60s? Because Carradine was around the 60s anyway. He was doing stuff.
But, absolutely.
But he comes from the time before that. Who were the more contemporary, we can go backwards, let's start. So people today know, who were the more contemporary, because everybody hears about stars, we all know the stars, who were the more contemporary character actors these days?
Well, these days it would probably be more actors, like if we're talking currently working, that more modern, I guess younger people would probably be like Steve Buscemi would be the big one.
Oh, yeah, right.
And Buscemi's, I'm a huge fan. I think he's fantastic.
And so it doesn't count that he got he's starring role in a TV series. That doesn't count.
Well, that's the thing. It's kind of a weird thing, though. I mean, but would he ever be considered a real leading man, though?
No.
by Hollywood. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's kind of a weird thing. You know, same thing with guys like William H. Macy, who, you know, love him. Dylan Baker, whose name I got wrong the last time you interviewed me, so it feels good to say it correctly.
Okay, refresh me on Dylan Baker.
He's actually done a lot of TV work, which is always kind of a sign of a character actor, because as researching the more modern ones, a lot of them have huge filmographies with TV appearances. Mm-hmm. But he's also in Todd Solondz's Happiness. He's in that wonderful horror anthology called Trick or Treat, which I highly, highly recommend. And he's just done a lot of stuff. Great. He appeared in that TV show Strangers with Candy, which is a wonderfully bent, messed up show that I adore. Mm-hmm. So, John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly did get, but he's not a leading man either. You're right.
Kind of a weird, I know what you mean though. There's kind of a weird ether with some of these guys. Like somebody brought up to me when I was telling a friend of mine earlier I was going to be doing the podcast, and they're like, oh, I'm sure you're going to be going on about Bruce Campbell. And I was like, well, is Bruce Campbell really a character actor? You know, I mean, on one hand, yeah, he's not like an A-list Hollywood leading man. But he's in an ether. I mean, on one hand, he is, and Bruce Campbell's phenomenal. I love him. I'm, you know, another guy I'm a huge fan of. But, you know, he's kind of like classically good looking. Usually character actors kind of have a more sort of unique.
No, he's a lead actor in C movies.
Yeah, but
he's a lead.
He's fabulous. But see, yeah, that's what I was thinking too. But if we're starting from the 50s and 60s, this plays perfectly. Here's my little LaRonde effect here.
Okay.
With the holy trinity, in my opinion, of character actors.
Okay.
Now, do you want to take a guess over which one and who's the actor in The Godfather? He's one of the supporting guys, obviously. He's in Godfather 1 and 2.
Okay. He's going to be supporting in both of them. You know, there's one who's in 3. Not the guy who was in 3. No, the guy who was in all 3 was Pacino's, was Al, the guy who played Al Neary, and he died. He got hit by a bus last year or the year before that. No, he's not him.
No.
Because I wouldn't even remember his name. But in Godfather, he's in both of them? No, but there's so many. I mean, you said that.
I know. Well, here.
I'm thinking of Vito. The first thing I see in my head is Vito Scotti. And that's not him.
I think that was probably mismentioning The Godfather, because The Godfather is actually kind of like a buffet of really great supporting character actors. Let me think of a really good. Okay, he rats out on them in the second one at the witness stand, in the court scene.
Oh, I don't know his name. That the guy who played the guy who took over the house, and the guy who played.
Joe Spinell, baby.
Is that his name? I don't, you know, there's a couple of guys in Godfather who they command the screen when they're there, whether they're supporting or not. And yet, I don't recall them from any other, I don't recall them from any other places.
Well, Spinell's pretty amazing, because he actually, he's in Taxi Driver.
Spinell's in that. Let's make sure I'm getting the right guy. Now, this is the guy, and I forgot his name. The guy who rats out on him is the guy who thinks that Michael is having him killed, and who takes over the house.
He's the guy, and you remember the first one? There's that great scene, just that epic build up where it's just like death. The death show's going on, and like a steel eyed shark.
Oh, you don't mean? Down. Oh, you mean the guy? Okay. Says he's a hitman.
When they he's a hitman.
That guy, yeah. And he goes, that's what they, yeah. That guy.
He's got that, yeah.
I know. Okay, yeah. So where else have we seen him?
Oh my god, a lot of things. Taxi Driver. He plays Travis Bickle's boss, I believe.
Okay.
At the cab company. He's in The Ninth Configuration, which is
in The Ninth Configuration?
He's in The Ninth Configuration. Yeah, he along with Jason Miller are the guys trying to put on the Shakespeare play with dogs. Which is brilliant. That's a great movie.
It is a great movie, but you also, but it was re-released as Twinkle Twinkle Killer Kane.
Exactly.
So, I liked
some
that.
Some people would remember that, Frank.
I know.
Be kind to yourself. Most people would be like, what's that?
I remember Ridiculous Things. And I liked that movie, and I saw it when it was The Ninth Configuration, and then that was like the only other movie that Jason, what's his name, appeared in that movie. The guy.
Jason Miller, yeah.
Yeah.
Great. another great actor.
Because he was only in, I think, two movies. That one? Three. I think he makes a slight appearance in Exorcist 3, but he's Exorcist.
Well,
he's in that, but he's a playwright.
Well, yeah, he was more of a theater guy.
Yeah.
Which on one hand is great. On the other hand, I mean, I wish he would have done more film stuff because he's terrific. But
well, go back to Joe this guy Spinell. Now, Joe Spinell. Okay, so
Joe Spinell, the fabulous. I love Joe Spinell, and most horror movie fans are familiar with him because he did Maniac, which at the time, I mean, still to this day, kind of considered one to be the more infamous sort of slasher horror movies. It came out in 1980, mm-hmm. and it's actually recently, I guess, been quote unquote and reimagined, which I think that term is total BS. It's a remake. Just say remake. Let's be honest. But with Elijah Wood of all people, I don't know how that's really honestly going to work out. But the original Maniac, Spinell's brilliant in it, and he was just one of the greatest actors ever.
Well, it's funny because I don't. I guess I may have seen him here and there, but I don't recall. That's what I meant about that. Just don't recall. Like it's a guy who played Luca Rizzi.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember his name, but I know he's been. I think I saw him in one other film somewhere.
Oh God! And I know. Mm-hmm. I see. This is my moment where I'm like, I should know this. Like, but
Yeah. No. Well, anyway, go ahead. So he's one. He's one of them in the. He's one of the Trinity. Yeah. Let's go to the other. Let's get everybody to make sure we know.
Joe Spinell.
Spinell. S-P-I-N.
E-L-L.
E-L-L. Joe Spinell. Okay, there's number one. Okay, let's go to the second.
Number two is...
let me try to guess this one, too.
Oh, okay. Let's do him. Okay, this one started off as... he did a little bit of minor TV work, like for shows like The Naked City, did some underground movies in the late 60s, and later on had a huge resurgence by being on a very popular HBO series in the early 2000s, late 90s kind of region.
Okay.
That's not
enough. You've got.
I got to give you more. Okay.
Yeah, since he's a character actor, you could do.
I'm all like, he's awesome. I'm trying to think of a good.
Oh, he wasn't in anything as glorious as a big movie like Godfather. Then.
But he's done some. He's done some good work. He got arrested a few years ago.
Well, I'm sorry, I left the police records, the actor police records, out of the studio here.
Okay, I've got it. His name is often confused with a very popular comedian who throws confetti.
Oh, I know you're talking about. You're talking about one of my favorite all-time act, Rip Torn.
Rip Torn, oh my God.
Yeah, I love Rip Torn. And one of my favorite all-time movies is Defending Your Life, the Albert Brooks movie.
Oh, right, yeah.
And Rip Torn is just... as Rip Torn-y as you can get. That's the ultimate. Yes, Rip Torn, of course. Okay.
Oh,
yeah. Yes. Okay.
Oh yeah.
He was in that Dodgeball movie too. That's the last time I saw him.
Yeah. No. He he's in a. I think he has an appearance in the latest Men in Black movie.
Yes, of course. He was in Men in Black 2, and he was in Men in Black 1, and he was in. You just mentioned it now. That was the Gary Sanders show. The Jerry Sanders.
Larry Gary Jerry.
Yeah, right. Of course. Wow, so I got that one. Let me try to guess number three.
Oh, wait. Well, before we move on to number three.
Let's talk more about Rip. Is that it?
I got to mention something about Rip. Rip Torn. I've written about this, this fabulous incident. This is one of the most inspirational moments for me ever.
Go.
Is he made, as I alluded to, Rip made some underground movies in the 60s. And some of those were with Norman Mailer, the famous author.
Right.
And now Mailer, of course, anybody that knows anything about Norm Mailer, Mailer was kind of like one of those bravado, macho man, like totally kind of like, I think, yeah, I'm not a big fan of Norm Mailer, personally, because he's kind of, he's an interesting writer, but he's kind of macho jerk kind of type. But they're working on a film called Maidstone. And Rip, in character, decides, now his character is supposed to do an assassination on Norman Mailer's character. and Rip grabs a hammer and for real, like, hits him on the head with
it. Oh, God, no.
And then it's awesome. And they, like, tussle to the ground. And it's funny. It's so brilliant because Mailer's all, like, sounding like a caveman. He's all, you know. And Rip's like, no, baby. Like, he's so calm. And it's just like, oh. And it's all captured in glorious film. You can see it on YouTube. Actually, if you go to my blog, I do have in the archives an article. I've done a film, an article about this film, both for my site and for Dangerous Minds, because I love it that much.
Wow.
It is one of the most stunning and sexiest things you'll ever see. Rip Torn kicking Norman Mailer. Not only does he, like, best him physically, but he bests him, like, verbally. And it's just, it's like, it just makes me happy.
Not a Norman Mailer fan. He's Rip's up there. I don't know age-wise or anything. Rip's
probably, I think he's about like near 80,
yeah.
If not 80. But he's in. I mean, he looks amazing, and he's just one of those great artists who's just, you know, he is who he is, and he's just, you know, he's full of piss and vinegar. And I think every artist worth his or her salt should be full of piss and vinegar.
Absolutely. Rip Torn. Man, I never thought to put him and Joe Spinell in. I mean, Rip Torn, go ahead, though. That's fine. I mean, I agree with him. I don't know about Spinell as much as I know about Rip, so maybe that's just my
you just got to rewatch The Godfather.
Yeah. No, that I've seen. Cheech, that was his name, Cheech. That was his character's name.
It was Willie.
In The Godfather.
Yeah. You know,
Cheech. Yeah.
God, he looks so good. Just, he's like that scene, you know, Spinell just looks so sharp and just, so predatory. Yeah.
He's the one who shoots Mo Green through the eye, I think.
Indeed.
It?
That would be Joe.
Okay, now number three. And this is.
This is the Holy Big Daddy. Trinity. This is my Elvis Presley of actors. I love this man. Anybody who you know.
Again, guessing. We're guessing.
Huh?
We're going to be guessing, so.
Okay, hints. Okay, this actor got his, first got kind of his break by appearing in Elijah Kazan's East of Eden, though he was dubbed, and he played a pimp in it. Later on, he went to do two films with Stanley Kubrick. One was Paths of Glory. The other one was The Killing. Which we'd mentioned earlier. He also was in the Monkees movie Head.
Oh, you know, I'm not going to know his name, but I'm going to tell you right. Wait a second. Hold on a second. Wait. Don't go away. Hold on. Wait a second. I'm going to wait.
I'm right here.
I got something here. Without saying his name, while I do this, look up a couple of. Give us a couple more movies that you know of.
Well, his biggest for us who are devotees of this man and his genius, he made a film that had a score that was composed by a very young pre-Mothers of Invention Frank Zappa, and it was and it's awesome, and it's called The World's Greatest Sinner.
Wait, which is with The World's Greatest Sinner?
And this this actor directed and starred in it.
He actually did some directing then, huh?
Yeah, he directed it, wrote it, starred in it. And he's one of the, he is my Elvis. He is one of the greatest, you know.
I know, and I'm going to, wait, hold on a second, because I know exactly. I see. There's no way to prepare for this. There's no way to prepare for this. But I know exactly where I'm going with this. If I could just find out where I am at any given point here. Oh man, I'm. Is he still alive?
No. Sadly, he passed away in the 90s. But his art is with us always.
Yes. Yes, I'm I don't want to waste a lot of time here, but I'm looking for how I know him best. Let me see. I think I know how to do this. hold on a second. This might be it. Yeah, this might be it. This could be it. I'm hoping you can hear this. Hold on a second. get to this right now. This is one of my favorite parts of the film. Head. So you know where I'm at now, right? I just gotta find, I gotta find out. Don't they have that? Does it go all the way? Yeah. Yeah, this is... Oh, no, it's going to end before I get there.
But ask me how does it feel. How does it feel?
I'll tell you how it feels. I don't like it. That's how it feels.
Oh, it ended right before he came on. That's a scene I'm looking for because there's something I remember. And I admit I must have been, I think I was high when I saw it, but I remember laughing to no end. Just, I wish I could get the rest. Oh, here. And here it is. Now here he is on in another part of the movie. And I got his name.
Yes.
Right?
I've been looking all over for you, creep. Wait a minute. Where your ass been? You ain't holding out on me, are you?
No.
Don't give me that. I've been looking all over the world for you.
Anyway, the idea is this. Byproducts. Imagine Italians. Blonde wigs for kids. Songs. The whole phallic thing is happening. I mean, why don't we use classic things? Millions! Hey! Nobody walks out on me, not even myself! Alright?
Okay. Alright. I would never remember a name. Even watching it, I wouldn't have remembered his name if it didn't come up on there. So you tell everyone.
Timothy Carey. Actually, his full name is Timothy Agoglia Carey, but he is our. If you could see, if we were doing like a video blog kind of thing with this, you'd see me just beaming right now. Just I'm swooning. And also, I would be remiss. I should have given you this as a hint, but he was also in Beach Blanket Bingo.
Oh,
that's right. He was South Dakota Slim.
Wow,
that's right.
Oh, here. Okay, here's the scene. Here's the one I was looking to find.
I bet I know which one it is.
Yeah. Here he comes.
Atta boy, Mike. Atta boy. Atta boy, Mike. Atta boy, Mike. Atta boy, Mike. Atta boy, Mike. Boy. Boy! Try better.
You know, if you know anything about that film, you know he might have done that. I mean, it might have been his whole deal. It might not have been in the script at all.
I would almost bet money right. on that. Like, because I mean, Tim was great. You know, that was his genius. That was an actor who, you know, you could give him something very rudimentary on paper, and just let him, you know, work his magic and just create, you know, almost like an alchemist. I mean, with Head, I mean, he got to have a little more fun because it was, you know, Head. Mm-hmm. And I definitely recommend it to anybody listening if you haven't seen it. It's one of the best films that came out in the 60s.
A lot of people, yeah, we've talked about this because of, not just because of Bob Rafelson, but of course of Jack Nicholson's participation when he was, he might have been a character actor in the beginning too. Yeah, right?
Well, yeah. He worked with Roger Corman.
Sure, sure.
And, he did a lot of great kind of B-movie types before Easy Rider.
And had him and Bob Rafelson, anyway, they put this thing together, and a lot of people might be turned off by the fact that it was a monkeys movie, but it is certainly way out there. It's so drug influenced per se, and it was whatever they wrote
according to Jack Nicholson and a couple of biographers, and even Bob himself, whatever they wrote for that was they did entirely high. I mean, just it was just, and it's crazy, and it does work if you're not high. It's still you're right. It's still a remarkable movie, and there's a bunch of people in there walking in and out of that movie who are character actors, and that was Timothy. This is what I'm saying, you folks out there. Here are listening to Cthulhu Chronicles, here with Heather Drain. Write these names down and look them up later. YouTube, you could find Timothy Carey all over the place. And it's better to see the scenes I just showed, even though it's funny to hear them. It's better to see them because you get
the full visual.
Yeah, absolutely. Timothy Carey, also, you said directed, and he never really got out of the B-movie stream, though, did he?
I would say he did. It's ironic we mentioned The Godfather, because Tim actually was always so close to being in all three of them, actually. Because, like, the first one, Coppola really wanted him. But Tim, at the time, was working on his project Tweets Lady of Pasadena. And so he was doing that.
Why did he want to? Because, well, we should tell everybody, too. He would know him because Coppola also worked with Corman. It came from that group, too.
Right. Yeah. He had.
What did he want? Do you know what he wanted, Tim?
Oh,
for?
Oh God, I'm trying to remember, and because I have researched that before.
Yeah. Okay.
My brain's a little rusty on that, but
let them look it up.
Yeah.
They got to do something.
Make it work for it a little bit. But, two, he played like a prank. Well, I think of the audition that was funny, but I think where the producers didn't take kindly, so he didn't get two. Three, Tim did a whole audition tape and everything, but fell ill. I think, you know, so he was always like so close, but you can imagine if he had been in one or two, like that would have combined two of my, you know, him and Spinell together. I mean, holy, oh my God, holy smokes. That
now, Tim, I remember seeing Tim more in, he did a lot. He must have done a lot of television.
He did Mannix, Starsky and Hutch, which, by the way, his episode of Starsky and Hutch is well worth seeking out because he plays a racist pancake maker. And I just want everybody to process that statement right now.
All right. Everybody get into your corner of the room and think about that for a second.
Racist pancake. Oh, my God. And he's so – I kid you not. If you don't mind, I do have a little story about watching when I first saw this in this episode, and I was watching it with my husband, Chuck, and there's a part where, you know, his character, like, basically this woman has been murdered, and she originally tried to get into the diner, and he ignored her, because, you know, she was, you know, speaking Spanish, and he's a racist pancake maker, you know, and they're interrogating him, and he says something really vile, racist, and all of a sudden he's like, hey, why don't you boys have some of my super pancakes? You don't know what you're missing, and he just says, wow! And he like rears, I don't know how else to describe this. He like rears his head back like a cobra almost. And I'm like, I literally fell out of my seat. Like, I could not believe it. You just have to see it. But it was like, it's just only Timothy Carey could do that.
A lot of that TV stuff, I'm sure if you pull up Timothy Carey, I didn't do that. I pulled up Monkey's Head, I was looking. But you'd probably find a lot of the TV stuff on YouTube.
There's a decent amount of it. The really primo Timothy Carey TV stuff that you're going to find on YouTube, at least as of like today in 2013, is he did some appearances on Art Fine public access show. And these are fabulous because these are interviews, and you get to just see Tim resplendent in a Hawaiian shirt, which, again, I'm swooning over here. That's just, yep, Timothy Carey in a Hawaiian shirt. That's awesome. And just telling all these great stories. And what's cool is one of those, one of the other panelists with him is Richard Blackburn, who directed Lamora, which is an amazing 70s horror movie that's definitely worth seeking out, with Rainbow Smith. But which really doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about, other than it's a really great movie, and I had to mention it.
I love the way you drop these names. They're terrific. If we were to do a second tier? Can the Holy Trinity have a second tier? The backup team or
the backup team?
Well, wait. What about women?
Well, actually, that was going to be my next one.
Okay.
My absolute favorite, and of course, there's a lot of great ladies out there. My favorite female character actress is Susan Tyrell.
Susan Tyrell.
The incomparable Susan Tyrell.
Tyrell. T-Y-R.
E-L-L.
Okay, now by name, you don't got me, but I know you can get me by a reference.
Oh, yeah. Well, she did a ton of films. The one that sticks out to me the most would be The Forbidden Zone, which was this great musical, 1980, directed by Richard Elfman. It also stars Hervé Villechaize. And the Kipper Kids, and Joe Spinell's actually in it. So, see, everything ties together for me in some weird way.
Yeah, but I don't know that one.
Look it up. It's like, if you love Cab Calloway and nudity and the devil, then it's got all of that in it.
I gotta admit, together, I mean, Cab Calloway and nudity together doesn't know. I like nudity, but with Cab Calloway, I don't know.
But it's really the first film score Danny Elfman ever worked on,
because
he's Richard's brother. It's phenomenal. It's also for you underground film lovers out there. It also has Viva, who of course was a big star in Andy Warhol's Factory.
Okay.
But Susan Tyrell plays the queen of the fifth dimension, or sixth dimension. Sorry about it. And she's just amazing. More people probably know her. Susan was actually nominated for an Oscar for her role in Fat City with Stacey Keach.
Oh, that goes back.
Yeah, which Stacey Keach is, you know, we mentioned The Nice Configuration.
Sure.
I love Stacey Keach.
Sure.
But Susan Tyrell, I mean, she does tough. She was in both Angel 1 and 2, which...
Okay.
The film had the great tagline, Honor Student by Day, Hollywood Hooker by Night.
That's my kind of.
I know you like that.
I'm looking up. I got to see her face, so I'm going. To, I'm
you,
just going to go
trust
to
me.
Her.
She's also in Tapehead.
I know I'm going to. I know I'm going to know her, Susan Tyrell.
You will totally know her.
You know, I'm going to find her photo. I see photos here. Yeah. Images. Get images of Susan Tyrell. Of course.
Yeah, that's like, of course you must know her. Yes. I love her. She's like, she sadly passed away not too long ago, which there's very few actors I ever really would want to meet, you know? It's so cool.
Eyesores, Forbidden Art Show.
Oh, you went to this?
I'm looking at her images on
I
Google
gotcha.
Image here. Hold on. And I'm looking for one or two that, like, really strike me in terms of remembering her specifically. Is that a young Stacey Keach? I don't know.
Probably.
Yeah,
probably. I love, young. Yeah.
Far From Home with Drew Barrymore.
Mm-hmm. Susan did a lot of films. She was definitely a working, you know.
Crybaby, Johnny Depp. That's the other one. Crybaby.
Oh, yeah. She was the mom, and Iggy Pop played her husband, which I was like, that's like I cast that or something.
And here's, what's her name? Here's the porn lady, the young, the...
Tracy Lords?
Yeah, it's Tracy Lords. I don't know what she's doing in this group.
Oh, well, she's in Crybaby.
Oh, okay. She's in Crybaby also. She was in Pee-wee's Big Top.
Oh, Susan was?
Well, I don't know. A picture.
She probably was. I haven't seen that movie since I was, I'll be honest, I think I might have been 10 or something.
Well, you know, when you pull up the images, you never know what. Poison Ivy?
She was probably, yeah, she's done a ton. I mean, Susan Tyrell's definitely one film, actually, and she does have a huge role in it, but she's great, is the movie Tapeheads, which was actually one of the early films that both John Cusack and Tim Robbins, you know, they were still very much kind of young, kind of struggling actors were in, and that film has another character actor that I would be remiss not mentioning is Clu Gulager.
Clu Gulager, yes, I do know Clu Gulager.
God, he's a hero of mine, just to put that out there. I love him.
Well, do we need to, what are the two other girls? I'm trying to think of women myself. You know, I keep thinking of, here's what I think about. The three girls who were in the TV version of How to Marry a Millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
Laurie Nelson. I'm doing this off the top of my head. Mary Anders. Remember Mary Anders?
That name is very familiar to me,
and
but I can't.
And the Marilyn Monroe part on TV was played by Barbara Eden.
Oh, my God.
But that, those
that
two,
is such a trip.
Mary Anders and Laurie Nelson pop up as character actresses in a lot of those ridiculous, you know, it was them and they were it, and it came from the sea, and the sea was the, you know, the it and them and creature from beyond and stuff like that.
Right.
But they don't ring any bells. So give me some more, give me a real contemporary. Well, no, wait, are those the top three girls, or don't you have a top three?
Well, no, I don't. Oh, I mean, okay. At this point, everything else is just kind of like, these are really great character actors. I did the Trinity mainly because I think, for me, Spinell, Torn, and Carrie are the, you know, for me, they're the ultimate. Yeah. But, I mean, you could do, honestly, a whole series about character actors if we were going to get really, you know, nitty gritty, because it's, you know, it's a great legacy. Mm.
We're with Heather Drane, who can be read, her works can be read. Mondo Heather is her dot blogspot. Isn't it .blogspot.com, right? Mondo Heather?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is indeed.
And also on that other magazine, what's the other magazine again that where you're showcased now?
Well, I'm a contributor for the fantastic political pop culture site Dangerous Minds.
That's it, Dangerous Minds, yes.
And I do have a dangerous mind, so it's very fitting.
She has a dangerous mind, and that's why she's here. On Cthulhu Chronicles with and here at, what is it, beginning of August here. With Heather, and we're trying to, and it's working so far. Last time Heather was on, we said, hey, we got to get you on here more times. And her and I had discussed what we were going to do, and we came up with character actors. We're eventually going to do that Dracula show, I guess, so just in general.
Absolutely, yes, as we get closer to the fall.
Are there any other, I wonder if they milked that, so to speak, or have they bled it now? Is it over with the Dracula thing, or have you heard any word about it?
Oh, no, there's a miniseries coming up in October on NBC with Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. I always have to stop myself because I always say Davey.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I would love to see him as Dracula. I don't think that's happening anytime soon. So,
okay, let's go back to women. I'm trying to think of some women.
I know. Well, this is an interesting part because I actually thought about that because when I made my kind of brief list to myself, this is very odd. Susan's actually the only woman on my list. Does that mean she's the only? Of course not. You know, and I'm a strong, you know, feminist and all that. For some reason, you know. I don't know if part of it's because, you know, the way that the machine is that women are kind of usually put in more wife, daughter, mistress kind of roles, you know, more so than men are in a lot of Hollywood films.
The lady who was in the new Lone Ranger, she was also in the Frankenstein with Kenneth Branagh and De Niro. Would she qualify? Do you know her name? She's a weird
Helena Bonham Carter?
Yeah. Does she qualify?
I don't really think of her as a character actress. I mean, she's good. You know, I just, I was thinking, I mean, for me, like, my favorite character actors are always the ones that really are super unique. And there are women out there. This is going to be another instance where as soon as I get done and get off the phone with you, I'm going to be like, oh my God, you dumbass. Why did you forget? You know? But for me, Susan's the queen, and, you know, it's just, for me, it's kind of hard to think, but she's amazing.
And you bring up a good point, though, because if we think of recent movies and we think of women, we always think of ones who have more major roles. We don't think of a lot of ancillary roles.
Well, right, and so I don't know. It's weird because even like with B movies, I mean, when I think of a lot of the actresses that stand out in those, they tend to be kind of more like sexy girl, or you know what I mean. Like it's kind of like roles that you wouldn't really see a character actor in necessarily. Now there are exceptions, and I mean, you know what I mean. This is all film theory, and the beautiful thing about theory is like, you know, I'm like Lester Bangs. If I'm wrong on something, you know, Heidi, I'll be the first one to say, you know what, I'm wrong. Yeah. So it's all good ultimately.
But I just, I can't, I'm going, like I said, I could think of all these, really, even going back, these old ones, and men always come to mind. And then when I think of women, I always think of lead women. And yet there's got to be women who played. I mean, what about Agnes Moorehead would be, she'd be an actress, but she never was a lead actress, was she? What, would she be a character actress?
Actually, Agnes Moorehead's not bad. Yeah. She's great. And yeah, she could qualify. I was thinking, now this is really old school. Mm-hmm. For me, this is like almost like a kind of an ether one would be Marie Dressler. She was a star. This is the weird thing. She was a star and she had leads, but at the same time, was she maybe viewed differently than say, you know, like Jean Harlow, who I love Jean Harlow for the record too. But, so I don't, you know, that one's kind of in a weird nebula. She's a star, but she's kind of almost like a character actor star. This happens.
So. Yes. Yes. And, yes, you're right. Because there's a ton of those there, because if we separate the women from the star women, the Jean Harlows and the Jean Arthurs and the other Jeans and whatever, and then we look back then, we'll probably see a lot of those. Well, Joan Davis, I would imagine, would be a character actress, even though I don't know how many movies she was in. But
no, Joan Davis is good, and actually, I can't believe the one that just hit me.
What?
Because I'm a huge Marx Brothers fan. And I've been on lately in our CASA. We've been kind of watching a lot of the early Paramount stuff. Yeah. Margaret Dumont.
Sure. Margaret Dumont.
She's really like the fifth Marx Brother in a way. She's just so like essential.
I don't know a lot of other. I mean, she was so so embedded in their in their play. I mean, everything, theater and everything. That I don't know where else I saw Margaret Dumont. Where else did we see her?
Well, my main thing is just, you know, from the assorted Marx Brothers films, but to me, she's so, even if, you know, that's all you have to do. I mean, you're in a Marx Brothers movie. You can't top that, you know, like you get to work with like Harpo. I have a huge soft spot for Harpo in particular, but Margaret Dumont's actually great. I mean, that's the thing. This is the rub with this. There are great female character actors. I just, you know, for some reason, I think sometimes they just don't get to shine quite as much as their male counterparts. So,
yes, and you know what? In lesser movies, there are women playing parts that are, for all due purposes, the lead role, and we don't, and then they don't go on to do anything. I mean, I could think if I, I'm not thinking of all these comedies. You know, I'm thinking of movies like. I'm thinking of movies like Buck Privates, the Abbott and Costello. I'm thinking about a lot of these comedy, these Olsen and Johnson things. And these women who were there, they were considered the lead women. They were, you know, that was a woman. And then they're nothing. Then you don't know where you find them anymore. So character act. But and yet there's what? There got to be women who played. There were other women, let's just say, in Elizabeth the Queen. Let's just look just right out of nowhere. We got Betty Davis and we got, right? It's not Betty Davis and Errol Flynn.
Mm-hmm.
There must be other women in there, weren't there?
Yeah. Well, that's,
where were they?
That's the thing. I think a lot of the ones, especially if we're talking like 60s and 70s, you kind of had sort of, we'll call it, for all intents, the Sterling Hayden effect, where you had women like, say, Joan Blondell and Shelley Winters. You know, women in their younger years were definitely like, you know, kind of the A-list glamour girls.
Yeah, yeah.
But then as they got older, they kind of got, you know, for more in the matronly roles, but, you know, because they were so good. I mean, Joan Blondell and Shelley Winters both, I mean, they don't really make them like that anymore. Those were some amazing women. But they kind of, like, were able to kind of take that and make it work for them.
Yeah, we hit on something very fascinating here in terms of this, too, and that is that a lot of the younger women who were really considered, like, Shelley Winters had, you're right, when she was younger, she was, you know, bombshell thing type thing. Unless she was, and she had some lead roles, even though she wasn't as big as, like, you know, some of the others. And you're right, as they got older, they continued to work, and they became character actors.
Mm, absolutely. And Shelley Winters, it's the thing I always thought it was kind of, you know, because I remember when she was, you know, being a kid and, you know, live at a Chris, people could be kind of cruel and made jokes about her, but she was quite the dame and mm-hmm. and just continued just continued acting and, you know, just really loved the craft and was great at it. And, I mean, plus she got to be in films like Kubrick's Lolita and I believe she's in Night of the Hunter.
She also, I believe, slept with every leading man in Hollywood.
Why not, you know?
I seriously think she's notorious for that. It was almost like a it was almost like a campaign that she... Well, anyway. so then, well, we kind of got stuck in the mud there with the women. Heather Drain is with us here, and we keep waiting for Heather's book, but we don't know when it's going to appear or when she's going to finish writing this fabulous book that no one has, with all these stories that nobody has put together, because she knows so much about all these things. And it's really underwritten, if that's a very bad phrase to use, but... the history of B, C, and D movies is not chronicled as well as it probably could. That's why I keep encouraging you to find an angle or two and get to work on something like that, because you are a you've got volumes in your head about this stuff.
Well, the thing is, the book I'm actually working on, because they're it's funny with film writing, because there are some really amazing books out there that do delve with, like, you know, with B movies and a lot of that stuff. You know, with my book, the angle is, the thing I'm always really entranced with is fringe culture, you know, both music and movies that are kind of more on the sidelines that don't get written about. I mean, it's the thing, because there are a lot of movies that are great that I love that have been really, you know, that have been fairly well covered, though, at this point. You know, especially a lot of your older genre films, there's been plenty, you know, of great writing, you know, from people like David J. Scull and, you know, Shane Dahlman and, you know, just all these, I'm forgetting a ton. I mean, just because this stuff has been so well chronicled. And so my attention's kind of more on, you know, everything that ranging from, like, say, like the sexploitation, you know, like, you know, directors like Michael Finlay to, you know, to like artists like Timothy Carey. But again, there's been people that have documented that to some extent. My goal is to kind of just keep preaching the word, you know, like if you're converted to this type of art, then, you know, you could read it and be excited about it and be like, yes, yes, yes. And, but if you're not, you can read about it and hopefully get turned on to some amazing, you know, amazing and kind of often, underloved art.
I was thinking of something, going back to, well, good, write that book and get it out here, will you? Just get it. Let's get it.
Well, I've already got some chapters done. Okay. You know,
a pusher. There's something I was thinking about, because I was on the a road a lot in my life, and I remember stopping at various, you know, staying at hotels in little cities, little towns, or what have you. And I noticed this: character actors many times could not get lead roles in movies because they were pretty much branded, and, you know, and they were going to, there was always, that's what they did. And they were always supporting this, that guy, or the other guy, and that guy. But, when they weren't doing that, and later on when they got a little older, specifically, I don't know, I think this, a lot of women would fall into this too. They did get leading roles. They always worked. Because I'll tell you this, I remember going, I don't know, it might have been Canada, it might have been somewhere in the Midwest or what have you, but I remember being at a hotel that had a dinner theater. Now, dinner theater and summer stock is gigantic, still gigantic, with out there in North America, at least I know, I think in North America, where very famous plays leave Broadway, and they're just very famous plays, and they're done in smaller theaters and dinner theaters. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You've seen, they probably even come to your neighborhood down there in the middle of wherever the heck. That weird spot that you live in this world. But I remember being in a theater, in a hotel, and going into the, restaurant or what have you. And there was a big sign, and I forgot the name of the play, but it would be like, you know, a Neil Simon play, something that had been on Broadway, and someone may have even become very popular for playing that part or what have you. But then the guy who was starring in it
and would never, ever have starred in either the movie of this play or the play of this play or anything, was a guy named Gail Gordon. You remember Gail Gordon?
I'm so fit. What did he do?
Okay. Gail Gordon. All right, you know what? He's like Jim Backus. Remember Jim Backus?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Well, Gail Gordon was like Jim Backus. He was that kind of guy. They could have been brothers. And Gail Gordon, who was on, you know, he was on Armis Brooks with the Eve Arden, who TV shows and did TV all over the place. He was a star. And it said, Gail TV star, Gail Gordon, starring in. And he was the draw at the dinner theater. And later on, when I would talk to actors here and there, and they would say that, you know, the thing was going on during the summer. These are like all character actor type people who just got work here and there. And after the studio system pretty much collapsed, everybody was out there just looking for work. And they would always do summer stock. And they would wind up being the stars because people knew them from TV or this, that, or the other thing. Because it would say, you know, Gail Gordon, you know, star of Armis Brooks. You know, like people would remember. Because they did. They go, that's him, and is he alive? For God's sakes, this is the closest thing to celebrity that comes to Waka Waka, Oklahoma, you know. Starring in this play that nobody would ever see on Broadway. And also, the fact that on Broadway, character actors took the places of stars in big productions. For instance, Woody Allen starred in his own play when Play It Again, Sam ran on Broadway. You know who took over for him when he left? Because he left. He's only going to do it forever, right? You know who took over? Do you know? You don't know.
I have no idea.
Bob Denver.
Oh, wow.
Okay? So there's a guy would never have opened. The Woody Allen play starring Bob Denver. And let's face it, well, Bob Denver's a TV character, but but he's a character actor anyway. Anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is there's always work for these guys, and the only way that they, and gals, and the only way that they got these marquee parts were in very smaller theaters and arenas and stuff. And they go right back to Hollywood and say, yeah, I got a part in, I had a part in, and they would always say things like, I got a part in that Brando movie. Yeah, that would be considered, I was in the Brando movie. And I was in this, and I should talk. I mean, I'm in, you know, I was in Meteor with.
Oh, man.
You know, I mean, I got my own little thing, but I never did summer stock. But, so I guess what I'm saying is that the thing about Karen is that there was always work for these people, even the less celebrated, as you're talking about, the ones from B and D's and C's. I mean, what did Tracy Lords do when she became? Well, she's a bad example.
Well,
isn't she? I mean, what do they do when they're not acting in pictures that don't make a lot of money and don't give them a lot of money? Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the thing about Tracy, I mean, it's funny because it kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier, because her first, like, non-adult film was a remake of Not of This Earth.
Okay.
So, and I mean, ever since then, she later on was in the movie Blade and the film Zack and Mary. Ironically, Zack and Mary make a porno.
Yes, I know. I had to see the second time I saw that. I noticed her. I didn't even notice her the first time.
But I mean, she's not done bad for herself. I think a lot of people would probably argue that part of probably what helped is that, you know, because there's been other adult people from the adult field that tried to kind of break it into non-adult film.
Right.
And
doesn't
happen. Some of them had varying success, but there's been a lot of prejudices. I mean, I don't know if a lot of people know this. Harry Reams, who just passed away a few months ago, was actually almost cast as the coach in Grease.
I saw that documentary on Deep Throat.
Yeah.
I saw
and
that
he
one.
He would have been amazing. I mean, this is the thing. A lot of people, you know, snicker. But anybody that snickers about actors like Harry Reams are people that have not seen actually a lot of his acting work. You know, they're just like, oh, yeah, porn guy, whatever. But Nay-Nay, like, you know, he was a great, you know, Harry Reams was a great actor, and he would have been great in Grease. And it's just, you know, it's just sort of the hypocritical Hollywood nature. Because, I mean, you know, Frank, you lived out there. And, I mean, I'm sure you've heard some sordidness and probably seen some sordidness.
Hello? Seen? Witnessed?
All right, don't. I don't know. But, like,
well, you know, but the amazing thing that I didn't know about that Harry Reams thing until I saw the documentary. And the amazing thing to me about that was I guess they must. You there?
Yeah.
Oh.
Absolutely.
Just kind of lost the air sound. But the amazing thing about that was, I don't know what they expected the audience to be for Grease, but Harry Reams wasn't just a porn star. He had been known for that movie, and that movie had been seen by everybody. Jack Nicholson and Warren Beatty went to court with him when they sued him. He had a lot of backing, and that was as mainstream as a porn would ever get.
Which is true. I mean, yeah.
Why would they? Why would they think all of a sudden? Why would they not even want to cash in on him? I don't understand that at all.
Right. Well, and also, I think part of it too is that, you know, I'm a firm believer. Like, you should always treat your audience, no matter if you're like a filmmaker, a writer, you know, whoever, with respect. Don't treat them, you know, I mean, nobody, I don't want somebody to talk down to me or treat me like I'm a kid. So I don't, you know, I don't treat my readers like that. And I think kind of that attitude, sort of treating the audience like, you know, oh, you're a bunch of little children. We have to protect you, you know, or some, you know, something ridiculous like that. And it's, you know, screw that. I mean, you know, if, you know, he would have done a great job. He's a great actor, gets the job done. I mean, yeah, Sid Caesar did fine. I mean, Grease is kind of really a lame movie, but it would have been a great opportunity for him. And I mean, just out of the hypocriticalness of it, just to me is, you know, pretty sad.
Now these days, and I wanted to ask you about this. We could somehow fit it into the topic, but the phenomena of the sci-fi movie Sharknado.
Oh God!
That's really. And I got the opportunity. One night I was sitting. I was ill. I had a whole problem, and I was sitting around, and it was on. I went, well, I'm going to watch to see what this is all about. And I knew because I've seen other productions by the Sci-Fi Channel, and you mentioned Bruce Campbell before. Let's face it, he pops up in a lot of those, or did. I don't know if he does anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched this thing, and for the life of me, I couldn't understand. And there were some faces in there I know I've seen before. And a lot of these movies now, TV movies, especially Sci-Fi Channel, they just put together these things really quickly. They put them together probably as quickly as in the old days when they put together those black and white, cheap Saturday afternoon horror movies. But of course, they have, you know, easy. They have a lot more access to effects and stuff, so they seem a little less cheesy on a small screen. But isn't that a place? And I mean, in Sharknado, what did you see it?
No.
Okay. Did you know when you read about what? Excuse me, when you read about what's happening, and now they're going to show it, they're going to do midnight screenings of it now around.
Oh, wow.
Do you believe this? And I mean, this is really phenomenal because nobody, they've been putting together things because I don't watch these movies, but I see them on the highlights, they see it on the grid when they tell you what's on, you know, it's like, and they mix it, you know, like a buffalo duck, you know, and a crocodile alligator, crocodator, you know, they put these things together, you know, and so then they put Sharknado. I'm sure they had, this is real, truly a phenomenon because nobody knew this was going to, you know, be as monstrous as it became. There are people in there, though, that, look, I went, I know that guy. And I know that guy. These must be, like, really bad character actors. Well, I'm saying bad. I shouldn't say that. You know what I mean. But you haven't seen it, so I can't continue this.
Yeah, I know.
If I said names, would you know that? You would know them, though, if I said names.
Possibly. I know, like, one of the main people in Sharknado is Tara Reid. I don't know. I wouldn't really call her a character actress. Just, you know, a Hollywood actress slumming, I guess. guess. I don't know, but I guess the joke's on me, though. I mean, that movie's trended something fierce.
Yeah, you know there's a theme song? Cast and crew. Okay, let's look at this here just for a second. Oh, great. It's images. No, on the web. Let's get cast and crew and see if you know any of these cuckoos.
Oh, goodness.
full cast and crew. Okay, where else but IMDb? Everybody who doesn't know the International Movie Database, that's the IMDb we keep looking for. How about Ian Ziering?
He's on Beverly Hills 90210. Okay. Again, I wouldn't really call him a character actor.
Okay. Tara Reid?
Tara Reid, yeah, she was in American Pie, but
I forgot this guy, John Hurd. John Hurd actually.
Oh, no, don't tell me. John Hurd's in there?
Yes.
Oh,
that's
my
that
God.
Guy.
That is depressing. Oh, my God. He's in, by the way, Cutter's Way is an amazing movie. Anybody out there? John Hurd's in it. He's brilliant.
But wouldn't he be considered
He deserves better than Sharknado.
But he was in Big. He was a character actor. He was in Big. He was in a number of character actors.
Oh, yeah.
He's a character actor,
Hurd's
isn't he?
Amazing.
He is a character actor, then.
Yeah, no, he is a character. Okay. Yeah, he deserves that is a crime. Okay, anybody out there that's a young filmmaker who's interested in making something good, please try to get John Hurd because he rescue him from this shit, please. Like, he did Cutter's Way, damn it! Come on.
Wow, Jason Simmons with two A's.
I have no idea about it.
Jason, I guess it's Jason Simmons.
His name needs one less A.
Yeah. Alex Arleo. Just name these names. You just stop me.
If these are younger actors. Yeah. I'm probably not going to.
Heather Joycelyn Blair.
No idea.
Diane Chambers. Tiffany Cole. Okay.
Nope.
Well, for all we know, though, I'm mentioning people who are going to be, like, you know, the tomorrow's character actors.
Oh, it's very possible.
Right? Yeah.
But it's funny. You mentioned kind of like on the sci-fi horror tip, because there is one actor I definitely want to mention before we wrap this up.
Go. Who?
And and again, like, this guy, just brilliant, very underrated, and Reggie Bannister. And Reggie's probably best known for being in the Phantasm movies, like Don Coscarelli's wonderful series. Reggie Bannister's great. He's a great working actor, and just he's memorable. Again, to me, the hallmark of a truly great character actor. He's memorable in everything. He lights up everything, kind of just, you know, if he's on the screen, you're instantly like, oh, my God, that guy's amazing. He's awesome. And you're just compelled to him.
Wow. But, where else have I seen him?
Reggie's also in Bubba Hotep, which has Bruce Campbell. So we got that. And Ossie Davis, which Bubba Hotep.
Oh, Ossie Davis. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but Ossie Davis is great. So yeah, and he's done a lot of kind of like independent horror movies. He's actually in a movie with Linnea Quigley, who I'm disappointed, Frank, because I meant
we haven't
to mention
mentioned
her.
It at all.
I was
yeah,
gonna mention her.
Well,
in
because
our last
she's
podcast.
A star. She's a star. I mean, she's not. She doesn't show up anywhere else but in her own little drive-in movies, right? I mean, when she's
oh,
not been
she's,
a right.
I mean, but you know, I had a personal goal that every time me and you do these episodes, that we mention Linnea, because we usually do. I think we've done several of these now. And
well,
Linnea,
you know, because I'm one of those asterisks. I told you, I wrote the first line she ever said in a movie.
Right.
So,
right.
And really? That's when she was, that's before anyone, and I knew then that she was going to be, that she could be super hot star. Because that's when she was, I don't know, what was she? She wasn't 10. She was of age. I hope. No, she was of age. and we knew it then. In fact, I tell this story over and over and over again. I was with the director, because I was the co-writer of this project. She came in for the audition, and we had auditioned a number of people. All she had to do was, she had to be a receptionist. That was her first role ever in a movie, a receptionist. And she had one or two lines, okay? Mm-hmm. And all the other ones came in. She came in and said her line, you know. And I mean, I couldn't get my eyes off her because I just told the director, I went, "That's her. All right, just hire her. Like, just hire her from the beginning. Although she's put on some miles. And here we go again. Now here's my Linnea Quigley. And Linnea, I wonder if she'd even like bump into me and go, "Oh, you?" I don't even know. Well, there she. But I didn't mention her because she's not a character actor.
Well, no, she's not. Okay. She's not. But I thought the makeup, because I could not believe when we got done with the last one. I mean, we talked about zombies, and Linnea Quigley's in Return of the Living Dead, which is one of the greatest zombie
right.
movies. So, my apologies. I think anybody that knows, that listens to the show knows, we love Linnea.
Yeah,
love Linnea. She's fantastic. And,
I wonder how to get Linnea.
She has acted with Reggie Bannister. And see, that is how I bring it together.
All right. You know, I haven't done any, and I do so little work, but maybe you can help me out. Maybe you can get her on maybe we can get her on a show.
Oh, that'd be phenomenal. She's I've known friends who have like gone to horror conventions and
yeah.
The stories I've heard about Linnea have all been really good. My friend, I have a fellow film writer friend named Craig Heyman who was a really nice guy, and I think he's interviewed Linnea and he had really good things to say about her, because he outreached at me on that, because I reviewed Night of the Demons a couple of years ago, which is one of her better horror movies. I really think that's a good one. And but she's actually a very great comedic actress. I don't think a lot of people give some of these, you know, the women in horror the credit they deserve, because a lot of times people are like, ooh, you know, boobies, but you know, and there's nothing wrong with boobies. Yeah, they're great.
There's nothing wrong with hers, I'll tell you that much.
That's for sure. But you know, but there is more. You know, there's a lot more to her than certainly, you know, the surface.
I'm sure that I'm sure she'd. You know, actors and actresses remember everything from the beginning to the end. So I know she'd. I know I'd drop a couple. Well, I'd know. She'd know. She'd know me. She'd remember that. At least remember this situation. She wouldn't remember me the way I remember her, because, I'm not as visible. Because you could go to. There's a ton of stuff on YouTube.
Yeah, but Frank, you are very memorable. So.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, but you know, I don't know about. Well, you know what I mean. But she's an actress and what have you. Whatever. But anyway, that's why I didn't mention her. Again, that's what I mean. There's a lot of those girls, and that's what I meant. There's a lot of women and girls who were leads in the lower in those, and they never show up in other movies. I wonder if Linnea. I guess we'd have to look and find out if she was in anything the heck else. That wouldn't qualify her to be a character actor anyway, would it?
Yeah, I mean, she pretty much her niche, as far as you know, has always been kind of just the realm of B movie, and there's certainly nothing wrong. I mean, a lot of my favorite movies are in that realm. So,
and you know, a guy, even Oscar winners, supporting actor winners, sometimes even actor winners. But I always think of F. Murray Abraham. I mean, he's you know, he won an Oscar,
right.
and then his career turned into he always worked and stuff, but there was nothing ever again. He became a character actor.
That's true, and he's a great actor. But no,
yeah.
You're right, because I think he popped up and
yeah.
I want to say that awful, awful, awful remake. Speaking of William Castle, of 13 Ghosts, which
I did not recommend
that remake. It's shite, but the first one's great. The original's great. But
wasn't what's his name before Monk? Tony Shalhoub.
Oh, Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah,
yeah.
He was a character actor.
Yeah, Tony Shalhoub's a character actor,
yeah.
he's very good. I like him. Monk's a good. Actually, Monk has another great character actor, Ted Levine, who most people probably
right.
are more familiar with as Buffalo Bill and Silence of the Lambs. But
I can't tell you how many people I showed Monk and I said, you see that guy who's playing the police guy? That's the guy from Silence of the Lambs. They have to look. Wow, they don't get it at first. But you're right. Him, he's popped up in a number of places. And yet I can't remember any of the women in Monk and say that they are character actors. Can you?
The women on that show I've seen are great, but I can't think of
weird.
any. But you know, honestly, I haven't seen Monk in a long time.
Well, I mean, I'm just still trying to think of women.
Right. You know what? A ton's going to hit us when we get done with this. And so anybody listening to us, thank you for being patient. And please don't throw rocks at us.
I'm sure they'll be looking it up. I'll probably get emails and people will say, what about her? And what about her? And what about her? And what about her? And that's good.
But that's
then.
Why, that's when we do a part two.
Yes. But it's also good.
On the ladies.
It's also good that they're paying that much attention to it. Oh, wait, hey, and Jack, you know, Jack Gilford. Remember Jack Gilford?
Oh, my God. What did he do?
I'm thinking of him only because I was thinking of Zero Mostel, and a funny thing happened on the way to the forum, and I was thinking of Jack Gilford, who used to do these. I guess that's right. You were probably such a little girl or not born. I'll tell you how you'll know Jack Gilford. He was the guy in Cocoon who said, "You guys are full of baloney. I'm not going with you guys." Do you remember the guy who played the guy who didn't believe things were going on with Wilford Brimley, who is another character actor?
Yeah, Wilford Brimley is the name that gets invoked a lot in my household for very weird reasons. Yes. But
you don't remember Jack? That was Jack Gilford, the guy who.
Oh my God, I think I do remember him. I honestly, and this is unpopular opinion, I did not care for Cocoon, but I'm just bringing it up. No, and he is good though. He's good.
Yeah, you know? But I'm just bringing up these names because they just keep as they roll through me, and still no women. There was
there's plenty of women. This is the problem with trying to condense a whole cross section of actors and actresses is like in an hour and a half, because realistically, I mean, you could literally do a podcast series about what we're doing. So in our defense, we're trying to cram a lot here and in a very little time. So.
And we're all, though it's only a brief amount of time, we are definitely overloading a lot of people, a lot of information overload here. Because we've already mentioned I don't know how many names, people, and I know there's probably people writing them down. I got to go, what is this? Who is that? I remember this guy, and who is that? If they're interested at all, as we are in the pop culture of all this stuff. But I think that being a working actor is, no matter what you do, is it's a great, I would consider it a great success. If you write, if you're filling out your tax forms, and you should, because you don't want to, you fill out your tax forms, and it says occupation, you can write actor. I mean, you should always say, I can get an Academy Award, but I'm a working actor. That's a great success.
Well, and I think honestly, like, I'm always up in the belief that, I mean, awards, I mean, of course they're nice if you can get them, but at the same time, I think a lot of awards are kind of rackets and sort of like the equivalent of, student council for adults, basically. I mean, cause to me, it's like, if you really want to support an actor or an artist of any type, instead of giving them a piece of metal, give them work, chance to get their work out there. That's more precious.
But what I'm saying is that I think a lot of them do work. And of course they campaign to get Oscars and stuff because it does bring your salary up and gives you a lot more opportunities, even though sometimes they turn out to be a string of bad opportunities and you wind up nowhere. but right. I guess the point I'm trying to make is that these people are unheralded, and we're talking about people who have made their living. And if you think about that, that's fascinating. It's great. It's like you just can't do it. I mean, it's so rare that these people want to be writers. And I know a lot of them. I mean, actors. I know a lot of people who, they took little side jobs here and there, but mainly they were actors, and they continued to be actors, and they continued to work as actors. To say people are not necessarily stars or, in one stature, the stature of stardom, awards or what have you, they can't, obviously, the Johnny Depps out there, there aren't that many compared to the number of people like we're talking to who've lived their lives being actors. That makes a great success, I think. So I'm applauding them all.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I find all of them more inherently interesting than really most of the A-list stars. I find, with very small exceptions, to be kind of bland. I think character actors are where it's at. And actually, before we leave, there is a female character actress that I love, and I'm kicking myself to. But you mentioned Crybaby. She's been, pretty much in almost every John Waters film, and Meek Stoll's fantastic. She should have gotten, talk about Oscars. She should have gotten an Oscar for Desperate Living, but she's phenomenal. I love Meek Stoll, and if anybody has a heart, they should love her too.
Of course, everybody who does have a heart loves Heather Drane, who comes here exclusively, and maybe one day you'll have your own Well, you got your blog and stuff. You're a writer. And yeah.
Well, you know, you never know what the future may hold.
No, that's right. Well, there's no future in those pants. It's only now. And as of now, as we come to the end here, once again, you see how quickly it goes by when we're having fascinating conversations. And Heather always does bring that to the table. Next time, maybe we'll do Dracula. Well, you'll think about it. It might be something else you come up with somewhere.
Whatever we come up with, it's going to be fun and wonderful, and I hope informative.
Go read Heather's stuff. I tell you this, I tell you again and again and again, and there's going to be a quiz coming up soon. If you don't, to make sure you did go, mondoheather.blogspot.com, and you get involved in that William Castle thing and learn a little bit more about that. This is, you know, this is really good entertainment, my friends. You can, this is like good stuff. There's not, don't just wait for every, movie that's coming out that's going to CGI you to infinity. And there's plenty of things out there that Heather is putting on the table and plenty of people you should know about and be entertained by. That's what they're there to do. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And desperate minds? No, dangerous minds. Excuse me.
Dangerous minds. I do have a desperate mind, too, though.
Oh, yeah. Desperate, dangerous minds. Continue. The next time Heather is here, you check her out. I'll be telling all again what's going on. Hey, darling, take care. It's always great having you on the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on.
You bring a wealth of sparkle to the history of pop culture, and I always get a lot of good comments when you're here.
Oh, well, thank you. I pay people very well.
No, you don't. Good night, Heather, and you take care of yourself. We'll see you again probably next month, okay?
Will do, sweetie. Thank you so much.
Be well.
You too.
Okay.
You too. All right. Bye.
Heather Drain, what a great laugh, too. She's got a great laugh. I can't even imitate it. If I imitate it, it sounds like I'm mocking it, and I don't want to mock it. I want to mock Heather. Heather's terrific. Go to that website, and you can get it. I don't even think you need an app. Can't you get it on your iPod and your iGalaxy and your Galaxy Pod? And is it a Galaxy Pod? I don't know. I don't know what the heck we're talking about. But we do know this. We know that we're coming toward the end here now, and this is Y2K Plus 13, the first show in August next week. I have no idea what we're doing. We are going to get Dr. Karen Wyatt will be back. I keep telling you that, and I'm telling you that again. I'm going to get in touch with her. Maybe leave me next week. You got to go to CatoloChronicles.blogspot.com in order to find the crux of this. And, of course, I tell you what's happening when you get on to me at Facebook, if you go there, and any number of other places. So we're going to have Dr. Karen Wyatt's new, what is it called? I think it's called, it's a book and a plan and a plot, and it's a wonderful thing, and we get a little serious, but it's good, because it has to do with kids and things and stuff. I don't know, whatever. But she'll be on here again soon, but so go to the website and find out what is going on with that.
That's Ms. Control over there, you know what I mean?
Well, you know what I mean. I know what you mean. And once again, we mean to give you the best of the best, as we do here. And I chronicle every single week that we can throughout August and into summer, fall, into fall, as we will do it. Once again, thank you, Heather Drain. Go to all the sites I said. Go to the stations on CatoloChronicles.blogspot.com. Don't forget Juiced Talk. I didn't run the spot here today. I'm sorry. Juiced Talk, where you get terrific archives of this show, also Velvet Steel, and our close friend of the artist D, who runs the whole gosh damn thing. Good night, Mrs. Erstwhile, wherever you are. We'll be back again as soon as we can, probably next week, the 8th of August or something. Ocho de Augusto. My name is Frank Cotolo, man, his name adorns the title of the show. I said goodnight to Miss Erstwhile, didn't I? Okay, then I'll just leave, because I got nothing more to say.